Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Thursday, August 13th. So, we've been getting more ideas from listeners and people that we know for episode topics, and this one came from Shivram Uncle. He's a family friend and a doctor. He asked my dad about seedless fruits, how they work, and why some countries don't allow them. I figured it was a quick answer, like, you know, they just breed them that way or something like that. But that question ended up taking me somewhere I really wasn't expecting. Because when I started pulling the thread, I ended up learning about the food that I eat every day that I just can't stop thinking about. Okay, for example, did you know that kale, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, and kohlrabi are all the same plant? They're the same species, actually. Scientifically, it's known as Brassica oleracea. It's actually one wild mustard plant that humans selectively bred over centuries for different traits. Broccoli for the flowers, kale for the leaves, cabbage for the head, and somehow ended up with six completely different looking vegetables that most of us, including myself, didn't realize were all related. And if you did, I guess gold star. But let's go ahead and get into this episode, because that mustard plant example isn't unusual. It's actually how everything in the produce section got there. Corn started as wild grass called teosinte that was roughly 1,000 times smaller than a modern ear of corn. Wild bananas were mostly seeds with barely any fruit. There's a painting from the 1600s by an Italian artist named Giovanni Stanchi that shows a watermelon sliced open, and it looks nothing like what you'd buy today. It was almost all white rind with some scattered pockets of red flesh. If you showed it to someone without context, I don't think that they'd know what it was. All of this happened through selective breeding, which just means the farmer looked at his crop, picked the plants with the biggest fruit or the fewest seeds or the best taste, saved those seeds, and then planted them for the next year. You do that for a few hundred generations, and the plant slowly transforms into something its wild ancestor wouldn't even recognize. Nobody called this genetic modification at the time because it was just farming. But the outcome is the same. A plant with a genetic profile that humans deliberately shaped to be what it is. The banana in your kitchen is as natural as the golden retriever. Both exist because humans spent centuries deciding what the next generation should look like. Now, to answer Shivram Uncle's question about seedless fruits, because I am a man of the people, they're actually not GMOs or genetically modified organisms. Seedless watermelons are made by crossing a normal watermelon with one that's been treated to have extra chromosomes, and the result is a sterile plant, kind of like how crossing a horse with a donkey gives you a mule that can't reproduce. The watermelon grows fruit, but the seeds never fully develop because the chromosomes can't divide evenly. This is old-school plant breeding, no lab required. But the seedless thing creates a problem that Shivram Uncle is getting at, and it's happening right now with the banana that you probably ate this morning. The Cavendish banana, which is the yellow banana that you see in every grocery store in America, is a seedless clone. Every single one is genetically identical to every other one on the planet. They don't grow from seeds because they can't produce seeds, so farmers propagate them from cuttings of the existing plants, which means the entire global supply of the world's most popular banana variety is one organism copied a billion times. Look, that's fine until a disease shows up that this specific genetic profile can't fight. And guess what? One already has. It's called tropical race, or TR4. It's a soil fungus, and it's been spreading through banana-growing regions for years. Because there's zero genetic diversity in the Cavendish population, there's no natural resistance for the fungus to run into. Every plant it reaches is equally vulnerable. This actually has happened before, too. The banana that your and my grandparents ate was actually a different variety, called Gros Michel. Unfortunately, it was wiped out by a similar fungus in the 1950s. The Cavendish was its replacement, and now the replacement is facing the same threat. The world's most popular fruit could disappear from grocery store shelves in our lifetime, and the reason traces back to the same seedless, clone-based agriculture that makes it so convenient to grow. And now let's talk about GMOs. Modern GMOs, the kind that get debated and labeled and banned in some countries, involve inserting specific genes from one organism into another in a lab to give a specific plant a specific trait, like pest resistance. That's different from selective breeding in speed and precision, but the outcome is the same. A plant that's been changed from its original form to serve human needs. Over 280 scientific organizations worldwide, including the World Health Organization, have concluded that currently approved GMO foods are safe to eat. The European Union funded 130 studies over 25 years and reached the same conclusion. Europe's restrictions on GMOs are driven by consumer perception and trade politics, not actually by safety data that contradicts the global consensus. And then there's the non-GMO label, which has quietly become one of the most effective marketing tools in the food industry. You can find the non-GMO verification butterfly on salt containers, bottles of water, and packages of cat litter, none of which contain genes and therefore cannot, by definition, be genetically modified. The label isn't telling you that the product is safer. It's just telling you that you shouldn't be worried about GMOs and that this product has been paid for a certification to reassure about a concern that the scientific community has largely addressed. The premium that you pay for non-GMO products at the grocery store is based on a distinction that, when it comes to safety, doesn't change what you're eating. There are legitimate debates about GMO agriculture, particularly around corporate seed patents and the effect of herbicide-resistant monocultures on small farmers and ecosystems. But those are business and environmental debates, not food safety debates. The food is totally fine. The system around it is where the real questions are. So let's close this one out. Shivram Uncle asked me about seedless fruits, and I ended up learning that a banana I eat every morning is a sterile clone. I also learned that 6 of the vegetables in my fridge are the same plant, and that non-GMO label on my salt container might be the funniest thing in my kitchen. I mean, yeah, there's no GMOs in here, there's no genes to modify. If you take one thing from this episode, it's that humans have been genetically modifying food since the beginning of agriculture. The grocery store debate over GMOs is really just a debate over how fast and how precisely we're allowed to do something that we've already been doing for 10,000 years. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.